Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 2, season 8. Have you been for a wee yet? If you want to go, pause us now, go for your wee, come back. And the only reason why we say that is because Ryan Champion sounds like he's got a weak bladder. I'm going to do the same as what I did last week. Ryan Champion on my right, cross-legged, hello.
Yeah, thanks for that build-up, you know, some introduction that. Nice to speak to you as well.
I built you up really, really quite some effort last week, and to be fair, Jack Bennion threw his toy well and truly out the pram. Whereas Jack Bennion now, who's over on my left, has got classical music playing in the background, and you know he's got his cravat on, possibly a big cigar, swilling round a large glass of red, I'm guessing. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. How are we doing?
I think we're all right. I think we're well. We're back. It's episode 2. Last week's was a bit of an epic. This week's is equally an epic. We've got loads coming up, by the way, this week. A couple of things before we go any further. Coming up later on the podcast, we're going to have the guys from the American Rally Association, who we're going to be doing quite a bit with, and they've got a new an app out and things like that. And we're going to be working with those guys. So listen out for that. We've got Bex Williams as well, who was just about to start doing hairpiece with Eske Pekka Lappi. No, I said it right. And
you've been practicing that, haven't you?
I've been practicing that for the last 24 hours. And we're also going to be talking about Andreas Mikkelsen with Bex. But ironically, it's going to be the first story we talk about here as well with the boys. Jack Bennion, your paper today, has put out a story saying that Tommy Mäkinen's sights are clearly on Andreas Mikkelsen.
Yeah, and they still are, as far as I'm concerned. The story we've put in this week says that Toyota, you know, sort of, after Mikkelsen and looking at him quite strongly, and I don't think that's changed. I think what has changed is that Hyundai have entered the fray, and Mikkelsen will be testing the car on this Friday, which is also done by David Evans for Autosport, which I think came out this morning, if I'm right in saying that. So the merry-go-round, actually things are starting to happen rather than us pointlessly talking about it on Absolute Rally. These things actually starting to happen now.
Right, do you think this is kind of the domino effect? Do you think somebody's finally went, right, okay, let's get him in a car, and someone else has went, actually, do you know what, we better get him in a car?
Well, obviously the championship got started without him, didn't it? Things settled down, and I guess teams had a lot to think about with new cars and new technology, and now we're sort of, you know, several rallies in. Everything's settled down in terms of the cars. The teams are already starting to think about drivers, I guess, aren't they? And we've chatted about Juho Hänninen and his up and down season so far. But the one team that did look like they maybe needed a little bit more strength in depth was Toyota. And so to hear Toyota were in discussions with Andreas is not surprising in any way, shape or form. To hear Hyundai coming in, I mean, that is, you know, that is an interesting one, isn't it? Because they've got three strong drivers. You know, we thought they sort of had Kevin Abring waiting in the wings as well as a younger driver coming up through, but then we've seen Kevin sort of largely without a program now this year and doing rounds of the Belgian Championship in the 208, and now suddenly we hear Hyundai talking to Andreas Mikkelsen. So I mean, they could end up with an incredible team of strength. But I think if Toyota let Andreas Mikkelsen slip through their fingers, they would kick themselves long term.
Jack, I think what for me the other thing that would be interesting. I think we all speculated that perhaps at this point of the season we'd only see Andreas maybe in a privately run Fiesta. You know, we all know Malcolm and M-Sport are very keen to get people and bring budgets in and things like that. And, you know, that's, you know, they've got a very, very strong customer-based team. We didn't kind of see it from perhaps any of the other manufacturers. But do you think the Hyundai will be a fully fledged Hyundai-backed vehicle, or do you see some livery on there perhaps? You know, similar, I suppose, to maybe something like Seb's got?
No, I think it'd be a works car, and I think, you know, if I'm Danny Sordo or Hayden Paddon, I think I'm getting quite worried by all this news, because, you know, I don't think either have had a particularly good start to the season. I think Danny, being a supposed tarmac specialist, was just not good enough in Corsica. You know, I think we can afford the fact that Hayden wasn't quite on the pace in the tarmac. You know, it's not really his strength, but not really particularly flattering in Mexico either. I know the cars did have some problems, but, you know, I don't think Hayden's made a start that he would be particularly happy with. So, you know, if I'm those two drivers, I'm looking down the barrel of the gun, really. And, you know, Andreas has done everything right, hasn't he? He's been patient. He's not, he's not criticised anyone or come out saying, why haven't I got a drive or anything like that. He's just been patient, waited in the wings, done everything he could, won WRC 2 rounds, and now hopefully he's going to get a reward for it by the looks of things.
I think in fairness though, Jack, I'll come to you in a second, right? I think in fairness though, I think Hayden's a slightly different one. And, you know, we openly spoke about this a couple of appearances ago, I think. Obviously, his connection in New Zealand with obviously high and down New Zealand and things like that. I think his deal is slightly structured maybe in a slightly different way to, Danny and Thierry. So you would think that his connections there and what he's doing with high and down New Zealand, and he's kind of the face of their marketing program and things like that. And I'm sure there's a lot of crossovers there. It would have to be somebody else, surely, and it's not going to be Thierry. And as I say, possibly Danny.
I think Danny's the favourite for the three who drop, isn't he, at the minute? It sounds stupid to say I'd finish him on the podium, but you know, particularly unimpressive, and didn't really have an explanation why for even so far for pacing Corsica. Really nice guy, and one of the most noble and sort of, you know, really nice guys to talk to at stage end, and a really nice character. But you've got to say he's not had a great start to the season, and Andreas is waiting in wings. And the one thing Hyundai can argue has lacked this year has been consistency. And Mikkelsen was consistently on the podium for Volkswagen. If anything, other than Ogier, he was the most consistent driver and bags podiums and points all over the place. So if you're Hyundai and you're Michel Hyundai, you're looking at things now saying, why aren't we higher up the manufacturer table, and why haven't we scored more points? And maybe some of that is down to Neuville and his mistakes, but he's actually shown the pace to be a rally winner, whereas the two haven't. So for me, I think I'd agree with the fact that Sordo is probably the prime candidate for losing his seat at the minute.
Right, and maybe this is a little bit unfair of me to come to you after Jack's just said that, but we've got Bex Williams coming up a little bit later on. I know she spoke about this a little bit, where she'd be speaking to Michel Nandan, and would there possibly be four cars? It is going to be four cars, so maybe long term nobody is losing the seat. Short term rather, nobody is losing the seat, but certainly long term, all the points that Jack and I have just been discussing there are relatively valid, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and I think, like you say, maybe short term it'll be an extra car, but maybe long term they'll look at how they're going to structure their program. Danny Sordo been around the WRC a long time now. Has he maybe said to the team that he's considering not driving next year? Is he looking to retire from top line sport? The ironic thing, if he is, don't forget he was really Chris Meek's rival in the JWRC, and we're just floating the idea that Danny Sordo might think about stepping down from WRC when Chris Meek's just got going, which is that's another debate. But firstly, if they did get all four of those drivers for the remainder of the season, it would be an incredibly strong team, and then they could, I guess, take their time with what they were going to do with drivers for next year. We know they've got a strong budget. They keep building these new cars year on year, and they've managed to do that, managed to bring out very competitive cars. So, it's one we're going to watch, aren't we? But I still think if Toyota, I think next year will be expecting, particularly after the good start to this year, Toyota will want to fight for the manufacturer's title next year. And, to do that, they need good points finishes from both cars, or at least two out of the three. And Lappi obviously waiting in the wings, and we expect Lappi to do very, very well, but he's still relatively short of experience. Hannanen, well, we've already talked about that one. He's got some rallies still left to show what he can do, but I'm sure Toyota will want a big push towards the manufacturer's title next year. Like I said, I think if they didn't get Mikkelsen, they'll regret it.
Jack, I'm going to run this one past you now. I think if someone like Lappi or whoever doesn't get an opportunity now, we could be back in the realms of kind of running out of talent for the seats available, which sounds ridiculous when you think about where we were a few years back. We're only two teams, and there's a lot of paying drivers and everything else. But I think we need to see these drivers coming through now. We need these drivers to get the opportunity to drive these cars.
It's a domino effect, isn't it? If the people aren't changing around at the top and the people aren't getting seats at the top, then that affects where people can go further down, doesn't it? But if you've got Timo Sunninen and Pontus Tiedemann, who are two candidates who I would argue, are very, very strong drivers and could slot into a WRC car. Maybe they wouldn't be your first choice at this point in time, but are drivers capable of doing that? And I think it's all part of the merry-go-round, this, isn't it? But yeah, I think the teams are looking at it now and thinking Andreas Mikkelsen's a proven rally winner who will almost certainly guarantee points. Let's take this really simply. I know he's going to go into a fourth car and they're going to get a chance to sort of choose who scores points next year and all that kind of stuff. But if you were going to put a driver in a car, would you rather have Andreas Mikkelsen or would you have Danny Sordo? And I'll leave you with that question. It's as simple as that. Which one would you rather have?
Ooh.
Right. It wouldn't be Danny Sordo. I'm sorry, great driver, but he's been there and had his chance at the top line. He's always somewhere near, but he's not a rally winner, or he doesn't threaten to be a rally winner on a regular basis. Whereas I think Mikkelsen's shown he can be that driver. So for me, as Jack's just said, if you're choosing between those two, you would go with Andreas Mikkelsen.
Has this come down to age and hunger? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think if you look back at Danny Sordo's career, he's always been a great driver, but he's never been that driver that you expected to see win the next tarmac rally, even, has he? Let alone the gravel rallies. You know, we saw him as a number two at Citroën for a long time. We didn't ever really see him threaten Sebastian Loeb. I mean, yes, he was very, very fast on tarmac, but he has always had that tag of a tarmac specialist, which basically what you're saying. By saying somebody's a tarmac specialist, you're basically saying they're not fast enough on gravel, aren't you?
Yeah.
And he, you know, great driver, very, very consistent.
Can I just put a caveat to that, though? Would you not say that about someone like back in the day, a Panitti or Delico?
Yeah, absolutely. And they were tarmac specialists.
But they still held their own, didn't they? They still had the ability to hold their own on gravel.
They did to a degree, but again, Panizzi, you would never have expected Panizzi to win a gravel rally.
No, okay.
Delacour, maybe back in the Ford days, yes, in the Escort Cosworth days, Delacour could go quickly on gravel, but yeah, primarily they were tarmac specialists, and Panizzi particularly, he was there to do that job on tarmac, so yeah, absolutely. But then the difference was then, you weren't expecting them to necessarily do a full 14-round program or however many rallies it was at the time. But, you know, they weren't doing a full program. They were doing selected rallies.
But do you think, I tell you what, boys, let's put this out there. Do you think there may be scope that the bigger the WRC gets down, the bigger these teams get, that we may revert back to those days? Jack, you know, where we had, you know, boys coming in, the likes of Panizzi and I suppose Delacour to a point latterly in his career of you know, you're going to do the tarmac events. We want you as a point scorer there. We'll have one driver who's going to be there right the way through. Do you see that coming back?
No, I personally don't. I think, you know, we've got so few tarmac rounds compared to gravel rounds that for me, it just doesn't make any sense. And I think most of the drivers coming through now are taught to be good on both surfaces. And, you know, we're just having a long conversation about tarmac specialists there. And to me, Danny isn't a tarmac specialist.
Ooh.
He's almost as good as he is. He's almost as good on gravel as he is on tarmac. For me, I don't know if you two agree with that, but you know, he's clearly better on tarmac, but is very, very good on gravel as well.
And sorry, did you just say he's nearly as good, but then he's clearly better on tarmac?
He is better on tarmac.
I wouldn't like to contradict myself, but
no. Well, yeah, okay, maybe I wouldn't put it like that then, but yeah, I think Sordo is better on tarmac, but also very serviceable on gravel as well, and
yes,
better on gravel than the likes of Panizzi and Delacour were in their day. So yeah, for me, I wouldn't declare Sordo a tarmac specialist.
I think you're right, but I think the other thing that's changed as well is the technology in the cars. And you know, in the early days, if you like, of when we had tarmac specialists, it was always the Southern Europeans that were the tarmac specialists. They were quicker on tarmac than the Scandinavians, but likewise, the Scandinavians were very spectacular on gravel and they were very fast on gravel. But as we've seen technology of the cars change, this precise tarmac driving technique has become prevalent on gravel, and hence we've seen the Sebastian Loebs of this world dominate on gravel when actually he was from a tarmac background, and the likes of Colin McRae and Carlos Sainz towards the end of their careers having to really try and adapt to cars that didn't really suit their driving style. So I think the nature of the cars has come towards the tarmac drivers as well.
There you go. We'll move on from this one. I think we've covered every angle of it, and I still think I tell you what, before we move away, right, I realise I've just done a do with Jack Bengen here. I'm just going to contradict myself a little bit. Where do you see him ending up, Jack? Where do you see Andreas ending up?
I think he'll drive Honda. I think it'll come down to they clearly want him, and he'll go for the best car that he can get at this minute in time, and that's definitely a Honda. So that's where I think it'll end up.
Right.
Well, they seem to be pushing hardest at the minute, don't they? If they're getting him in a car this week to test, then they've put the hand up highest. I mean, Toyota have had the chance, really, haven't they? Yeah, Andreas Mikkelsen hasn't just become good. They haven't just thought they might need another driver. I think Toyota have had the chance to get in there. And if Hyundai are shouting as loud as they seem to be, then there's a good chance they're going to get him.
See, something that you touched upon before, right, and I'm going to go against the grain here. As much as I agree with everything the Purdy have just said, I don't think Toyota can afford not to have a proven driver in that car.
Which I agree with 100%. You know, they need two top-line drivers because of the money they're spending on that program and what the demands from Japan will be for next year.
Your question, Tony, is who needs him the most? And the answer to that is Toyota. But yep. If you're asking where he's going to end up, if Hyundai are making the biggest noise and they've got the fastest car, so Mikkelsen's going to go there. I think, you know, it's fairly simple that either way.
But just, I tell you what, let's be fair. You know, your paper today is released a story with regards to Andreas, very much realistically becoming at least getting involved with Toyota, you know, offers a top flight. So, you know, 24 hours is a long time in rallying, it's fair to say. You know, by tomorrow, Toyota could be putting their hand up and Toyota could be saying, right, you've got a full program.
They could. And then people won't need to either read MN or listen to Absolute Rally. They'll pick up everything somewhere else, won't they? Who knows? Maybe Citroen will pop up tomorrow and say, you know what, you can definitely mark ours and we'll have you as well. And, well, you know, we'll have a proper driver on our hands, won't we?
I think, you know, I just think it's really, really interesting. I completely agree with you two, but if Toyota are realistically making noises about the possibility of talking to Andreas, then it's a no brainer. They've got to have him in that car now.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
And you know, they may be being canny a little bit, you know, there was obviously, you know, Seb, of course, you know, wanted to, you know, went and drove the Toyota, he wanted to drive the Citroen, it didn't happen. He drove the Fiesta and then he made a decision to go with the Fiesta. You know, this could be a situation where Andreas is perhaps, you know, getting a feel for everything that's available. And, you know, I don't know where David got the story from about Andreas, you know, talking to Toyota, you know, possibly as soon as Portugal, the article says, you know, that story's come from somewhere and that source, you know, may well be the place where, you know, Andreas could well be in a Toyota test in this time next week.
All I can imagine is Andreas Mikkelsen must be thinking about those buses syndrome. You know, because when he was scratching around for a drive in January and Skoda came to his rescue, I'm sure he'd have been glad of been in this situation now.
Well, absolutely. You know, there's another curveball, which obviously David's put in his article as well, with regards to the possible that Craig Breen, Sebastian Lefebvre could share the C3 to make room for Mikkelsen. They're going to need a child seat in the back of that, aren't they? It's going to be a busy car. That's not even worth putting the names on the back windows of that one if they're going to have three people sharing a third car. anyway, boys, moving on, we'll watch this story with great interest. We'll watch this story with great interest. Anyway, moving on, just wanted to catch up with regards to another article that you guys have run, Jack, with regards to Chris Meek. I can fight for wins on every round of the WRC, which is kind of follows on from, I think I've quoted it two or three times now, what Paul Nagel was saying when he was on the program a few weeks back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's that, but also I think it's an admission now from Chris that he needs to go out and win the rest of the rallies because he's not going to have a chance to win the championship if he doesn't. So, yeah, a bit of a two-pronged kind of read between the lines in that sense for that story. But I think he can challenge wins now. I think we've seen the development that Citroen have gone through in the last, you know, 2 months, it's, if you actually look back and consider the time period of how quickly Sitchin have turned everything around, it's pretty astonishing, really, and it shows what a manufacturer can do when they've got the right budget and the right focus on the car behind them. So for how far they've come, it's incredible. And you know, you've got to say on both surfaces now, we saw how quick Chris was in Corsica, and we saw how quick he was in Mexico as well. So you've got to you know, and the adjacent story from Brian Hyundai, which you probably might touch upon in a minute from Nandan, Citroen have got everyone worried, and I think they're right to be worried at the minute.
Right, you've been around probably the same time as me, but by the same token, I think you've had your finger on the pulse probably a lot more than me. We've been here before, haven't we, where, you know, a manufacturer's come in with a new car or whatever, it hasn't quite worked, and then they've had to go at it hammer and tong, as Jack's just made reference to there. You know, they've made some efforts to turn this around, but were you shocked how much effort has had to go in and turn it around, bearing in mind what they did last year, in order to kind of be ready straight out of the box?
I think that's exactly the point. Am I shocked that the Citroen is now one of the, arguably the car to beat? No. Am I shocked that it wasn't at the start of the year? Then definitely yes. As is obvious through WRC history over the last, 10 years or so, with Loeb's dominance, you know, the Citroen was the car to have. Well, and they focused on rallying. It was always the best car, and regardless of who their rival was at the time, albeit normally Ford, regardless of which other manufacturer was involved, the Citroen was the car to beat. And so, yes, you know, for this year, when it would have been interesting if Volkswagen had still been there, because obviously Volkswagen, in the time they've been in WRC, they obviously had the car to beat as well. But nonetheless, with Citroen focusing fully on rallying again, I expected the car to be good from the start, and the fact that it wasn't was a real shock. So the fact that it's so quick now, I think it's you know, this is what we expect to see of Citroen racing when they completely focus on WRC.
Jack, I know you love a little bit of history as much as Ryan, as much as myself. I may be doing them a disservice here, but I don't remember a Citroen driven by Sebastian Loeb not quite being on it out the box.
No, I think that's a fair point to make, and yeah, I definitely wouldn't argue with that. You know, they've always been committed, haven't they? However you look at things, and the fact that they ended the World Touring Car program to focus on rallying said a lot in my eyes. And yeah, I definitely agree with Ryan. I was, you know, sort of expecting them to be at least the pace setters at the start of the year, and it was a surprise that they weren't. But you know, it shows what, like I said, it's we've talked about M Sport a lot, and it was great to see them coming out of the box. But you know, I don't think they have the resources that the likes of Citroen have, and if their car wasn't sort of sorted straight out of the box as it fairly was, I would say, you know, I think they would have been in trouble. But you know, we've seen Citroen turned up, not been quite where they wanted to be. Plowed the resources into it, fixed, you know, got all the fixes there, and the car looks great. And yeah, you know, it's a struggle to see them being beaten for the rest of the year. And you know, obviously they will be, and Hyundai will be close, but I think they've definitely got the car to beat now.
Very much so. Very much so. A couple of things which we talked about last week. M Sport searches for fixes after Tour de Course woes on its Fiestas, Jack.
Yeah, we saw quite a few issues with the Fiesta over the course of the weekend, and not much to add really there. And other than Malcolm's, you know, and his team are looking into it, and Malcolm's fairly sure that everything will be sorted for the next round, which you would kind of expect. He doesn't reckon they're going to have to use any homologation tokens or anything like that to get everything fixed up. So you know, it's looking okay for M Sport. The only question you have over M Sport now is can they keep with Citroen and Hyundai, because you know they seem to be making strides forward, and if Thierry can keep it together like he did in Corsica, then you know, Hyundai and Citroen are really the ones to beat, aren't they?
Very much so. I'm really looking forward to Argentina. Bex and myself talked about Argentina a little bit near the end of the piece we did with her. She was she doesn't like doing predictions, I think it's fair to say. But guys, have we had any thoughts with regards to returning to Argentina? Ryan, have you got any thoughts on it?
Chris Meek, 100%.
Oof! I wasn't playing games. Well, there wasn't even an M there. That was straight out. Jack Bengen.
Oof, John. I've thought about this a little bit, and yeah, sorry, my answer's not quite as simple as Ryan's. But I think Hayden Paddon's one to watch. You know, he's had a difficult start to the year, but he keeps coming. He's very mentally strong, isn't he, Hayden? Keeps coming back all the time, and fortitude. That was the word I used last week, wasn't it, Tony? And you quite like that one, so I'll use it again. Hayden Paddon likes to show a lot of mental fortitude, and if there's any rally that you would like to see him or could see him bouncing back on, then this Argentina has to be won at the one he won last year. So that's fantastic. Power stage against Sebastian Ogier, and that should give him a bit of confidence going into this event, and maybe it'll just give him the boost he needs to really put him back at the front again.
This is Absolute Rally. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangor-on-Dee Racecourse the 17th and 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangor-on-Dee Racecourse, 17th and 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
So we'll come to Jack Bengen for Is Any Other Business for the second time. Jack Bengen, you're Any Other Business for this week, please.
Coming to me for Any Other Business, I like it. Well, my Any Other Business goes to Ireland this week, which may be a little bit sort of out there for some of our listeners, but hopefully they like sentiment. So Motorsport Ireland, which is the governing body of rallying in Ireland, has put out a letter this week which has suggested that there's too many rallies in Ireland, and that maybe some of them should alternate and rotate. And I thought I'd ask you two about what you thought about this, because there's been problems in Ireland with money for insurance. It's costing a lot for events to get insurance, and they're finding it difficult to find underwriters for their events. So the entry money is going up, and the number of events that there are, you know, people are struggling to pay for their entry fees each week. So I actually think it's a really good idea and a really bold idea from a governing body to come out and say, do you know what? We've got too many events. Some of you are going to have to rotate, and some events are just going to have to run every other year. And
I'm going to have to let Ryan Champion take this one. As a man who's been involved with putting events on, I'm going to let Ryan take this one first, and then
he's probably not going to be very happy with my suggestions. But I think, given the fact of what's going on over there with the entry fees and stuff, I don't think rotating events is a bad idea at all. And I just the main point I have is that it's a bold step. Even if it doesn't happen, it's a very bold step for a governing body to take, and a very, you know, you've got to take your hats off to them for actually suggesting it, because that is a big move to take as a governing body, especially when governing bodies get so much thick as it is anyway.
Yeah, I think what I'm shocked about here is that they're having to think of such drastic measures, and I think that probably shows just how difficult things are. I mean, I think I read somewhere about one event was actually talking about an insurance excess. If you were competing on the rally and you had an accident, then that you could be liable for quite a sizable bill at the end of it. I can't say I'm a fan of that idea. But God, if they're thinking of having to do that, it just shows, you know, the issues that they're currently facing.
Yeah, I see. Do you know what? I didn't think you'd go down that particular avenue, to be honest with you, Ryan. I think from a black and white standpoint, I completely and utterly, if that's what's got to happen for them to do events, I think rotation, we always get into the realms of we'll lose events. I think, I some events won't be able to stand the rotation. They'll lose the momentum. They may lose sponsors and stuff, or whatever it may be. And I think it makes it difficult for areas. You know, we all know, and we've all kind of been waxed lyrical with regards to how much money is generated in local economies when rallies are on and things like that. And, you know, I think there's a bigger picture, but without the insurance, and I knew this was coming because I spoke to somebody in January at Tulsa Sports Show about this, and, you know, people who were insuring cars as well are having massive problems in getting shell insurance and things like that, which is something that we've always took for granted, it's being able to get, but it is now a lot more difficult to get insurance cover, and insurance on event cover, even in this, even in the UK, you know, and gravel rallies over here and tarmac rallies, is rocketed by about 30%. And I can see this issue with the lack of underwriters only growing in. And to be fair, this is why I am a little bit skeptical, and we'll go completely left field here. While it's all very well and good for the announcements that were made last week, Jack, with regards to closed road events and stuff like that, the bigger picture is, doesn't matter, because we're not going to be able to get insurance.
It's definitely going to be a struggle, isn't it? But, you know, hopefully you referred to a few of the economical benefits and stuff like that. You know, if we can get local businesses and stuff like that involved in the events that are using closed roads, then, you know, we can get a bit of financial cart behind the events, and that can only help. But yeah, definitely take your point. The insurance issue's growing, whether it's tarmac, closed road, stage rallying, or whether it's, your gravel stage rallying, it's only another issue that rallying's facing, isn't it? It's going to be more difficult in the future. But in my experience, you know, where there's dangerous events, if you like, or any kind of event, there's always an insurer out there, and it's becoming more difficult to find them, isn't it? So it's an issue that's going to plague the future.
Do you know what, Jack? Yes, there is. There's always an insurer out there, and Ryle probably back me up on this because he's drove other people's cars, as I've drove a lot of other people's cars as well. I'm assuming, Ryle, you had insurance cover, you had Shell insurance and things like that on some of the higher cars you've used, the arriving drives and stuff in the past.
Yeah, and even when I've been loaned cars, when people have been good enough to loan me cars of a reasonable value, then you've got to insure them, because otherwise, you know, if things all go wrong, it could end up in a very difficult situation. So whilst people are often kind enough to loan a car, they want a car back, and obviously if that isn't underwritten one way or another, it can be very difficult to deal with. And yeah, over the years there's been in recent years, a growing number of insurance companies involved, and that was certainly good from a quote point of view. But like you said, the quotes do seem to have gone up in recent times, and now it's common on, if you see all these R5 cars out every weekend, they mostly have a minimum excess of somewhere in the region of £7,500 to £10,000, because the insurers don't want to deal in small accidents. They don't want to deal in somebody knocking a corner off, knocking a bumper off. They're not interested. They'll settle if it's a big accident. But to be rallying with the risk of a £7,500 or £10,000 accident, he's not one to be taken lightly.
No, and that's the other thing that needs to be. I suppose these guys now are going to have to factor these into budgets and stuff like that. You know, as I say, I've used insurance for years, and I still, I insure my own car, and I know from insuring my Shell that even this year, BTRDA National Gravel Event over here, it's costing me the same as what it was costing me last year to do a BRC round to insure the Shell for the same value. That's what it's gone up, which is, ridiculous when you think about the more stage mileage we were doing. We were doing more than half the event of a BTRDA rally, and we're now paying the same insurance cover. And I think it's ultimately, I think a lot of the companies now that are offering insurance, ultimately underwritten by the same underwriter anyway. So it doesn't matter who you go to. It's just a matter of who wants to basically make more money on the referral. But anyway, we've got bogged down in insurance, but folks, if you've got opinions on any of the things we're talking about, please, by all means, drop us a message. It's studio@absoluterally.co.uk. Of course, you can drop us an email. I'm going to do some emails in a second. And drop us a message on Twitter, which is absolute_rally. Of course it is. Right, have you got your any other business?
Yeah, two parts to my any other business this week, and hopefully it doesn't involve getting bogged down in anything particularly complicated, but just putting on the rose-tinted spectacles once again. I was in an interesting Twitter conversation the other day about interesting rally cars, and I'll limit this to WRC because we could go down all sorts of rabbit holes if we looked at national cars. But and I'll open this up to you two gents in a minute, but I'd like people to tweet in with ideas to this. What is the most unusual car they've ever seen compete on a WRC rally? And I retweeted the picture the other day of a Peugeot 504 pickup with a V6 engine in it on the it was quite a common use car on Safari Rally, Ivory Coast. A couple of the Kenyan drivers, David Horsey and Johnny Hellier, they used to use them in Africa, and I think that ranks as one of the rarest, most unusual rally cars. We've also seen the odd Trabant and Beetles and whatever, but go on, guys, just before I got the second part, off the top of your head, what is the most obscure car you think you've seen on WRC?
Jack, you can go before me. I'm struggling.
I don't know if it's obscure, but unusual definitely would be the, I can't remember what the actual sort of model was, but the Mercedes, like the sort of beige Mercedes that competed for a while in around WRC circuits was pretty awful. I can't remember what the
designation.
I don't know what it was. The works program, the silver cars.
Yeah, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, there was the works ones, wasn't there? But there was a couple of beige ones that knocked around for a while, and they just looked crappy and horrible and awful.
I don't remember the beige ones, but the 450, SLC or whatever at the time, that was a long distance.
That might be the one. That was pretty unusual. And I think at a similar time, there was an Alpha as well, wasn't there? Was it a 33 or was it before that?
There was a GTV, wasn't there? The V6 GTV used to compete on tarmac, Corsica, right, for example. Yeah.
That always looks quite unusual on the stages.
Actually, I'm really, really, really... I think the only one that I can kind of, and I think I even mentioned it the other day, I think on the Twitter conversation, is one car which I still think is possibly the ugliest car I have seen and ever sat in, albeit it was a road going version, which was the Citroen BX.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And there was a huge, just whenever I looked at that car, I was just left with why.
Yeah, the BX4 TC wasn't the most attractive car, particularly when you look at the mid-engine Visa they were testing as well before they went with the 4 TC for Group B.
The BX wasn't a 10 to 2 girl, it was a 2 minutes to 2, possibly the best way of describing it.
But obviously, homologation has thrown up a few unusual ones. I think a 504 pickup's the strangest looking one. The Subaru Vivio, that was a quite a special little number. Obviously, Colin McRae drove a 660cc Subaru Vivio on the Safari Rally as well. Which brings me to the second part of my any other business is Easter weekend was always traditionally a big weekend for rallying. Firstly, around these parts of the circuit of Ireland, it was always a round of the British Championship, round of the Irish Championship, and obviously in recent times again has run around this time of year, but it was always an Easter event. And then, of course, there was the original East African Safari Rally. And if we go back 30 years ago, literally 30 years ago to the day, obviously it was 1987, the 1987 Safari Rally was on, and the winner was quite interesting. Now, Jack, I'll give this to Jack, because I don't think there's any chance of Tony getting it. Who won the 1987 Safari Rally, Jack Benyon?
No, I have no idea.
Now,
right?
Think about cars. What changed in 1987?
Well, it was the end of Group B, wasn't it?
So it was the first year of Group A. Now, think about one of the more unusual rally cars. Little bit larger, maybe Gentleman's Express.
Ah,
sounds like Tony's got it.
Go on, Tony.
No. I'm just thinking Rolls Royce.
What, on a World Championship rally?
Well,
there wasn't one in the Safari, wasn't there, a Rolls Royce? Wasn't quite what I was alluding to.
A Gentleman's Express.
Well, the Safari.
That sounds like an act.
The Safari Rally was won by one Hannu Mikkola in an Audi 200 Quattro with teammate Walter Roll backing him up. And it was when Audi came back to rallying after they pulled out mid-season in 86. They came back in 87. Unbelievably, Walter Roll stuck one on the podium in Monte Carlo because it was a huge car compared to the Lancia and it was underpowered. And, of course, they went to Safari and Mikkola won Safari with the car. The interesting point about it was that it was Audi's first win of the Safari Rally. So all the way through the Group B period, when they spent a fortune testing the cars in Africa, they spent months making that car win in Africa. It never did. And ironically, when it came to the Group A rules, they had this big cruiser, this big, Autobahn cruiser, and they took it to the Safari Rally and it won.
There you go. And now
that's why we love you, Ryan Champion.
That's why we have Ryan Champion, I think it's fair to say. My area of the business is a little bit of admin, really, for us. But basically, I just wanted to... there was a couple of people who've emailed in. I apologise to Rich Williams and also to Ryan McLean. A little bit timelined. We've been doing a little bit of admin. We've had some emails via the website. The email system now falls into the right place. It wasn't quite working properly. So they are a bit timeline, but we do thank you for taking the time to drop us messages. Derek Smythe as well for dropping us a message. Patreon folks, thank you to Robert Wooden, Scott Newman, Andy Wakeman, Sam Jacks, Rianne Calder and Bertie Redfern. You guys have all got involved via Patreon. Patreon is a way of supporting the podcast. We are going to be doing some bits and pieces. If you have subscribed and you have agreed to try and help us any way you can, with a dollar or whatever it may be, via Patreon, you will be going into a draw for something quite interesting. And I can't tell you what it is yet because I don't know what it is. No, I know roughly what it is. And we're going to be doing some draws and giving some bits and pieces away for the guys that have supported us via Patreon. So the guys via Patreon will only go into that anyway. And that's my other business for this week, folks. So, not as well, I could say it is as interesting as Jack's, kind of. It's not quite as factual, probably, as involved as what Ryan's was, but that's why Ryan's there. So there you go.
So again, for the second week in a row, you're telling everyone how much better Ryan Champion is than me. I see how it is.
Well, Jack, the only thing I will say is that you are possibly posher than Ryan Champion this week. Because Ryan Champion, and that takes some doing, Jack. You've got to remember, normally he's in his tux when he does these programs. But normally he's having a posh coffee, sat in his office, and everything else. When we started this, he's got a mug of tea, and thankfully you can't see this, which I think is important. I don't think anybody wants to see us. You've got Jack has got he's sat in a nice park where it's sunny, and he's got a violin player just behind him. Playing tunes, and that's not, we're not making that up. If you want us to tweet a picture, by the way, of where Jack is sat when we made this podcast, let us know. And the violin player's there. Just saying.
Anyway, everyone knows I'm Ryan Champion's biggest fan, man, so there is no need for that. Really, it's just
you're the politest co-driver he's ever had.
Yeah, I am the politest co-driver he's ever had.
That's true. That's a fact.
Yeah, but you've never been mine.
That's going on my grave, though. No one can ever take that away from me.
Ryan Champion's grounded because he's expecting, or rather, lovely Gemma's expecting. So Ryan's going nowhere. So we know we've got him next week. Ryan's safe. He's in the bag. So same time, same place for Ryan next week. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I'm definitely grounded. Yeah.
And Jack Bennion, you're going to be with us next week as well, aren't you?
Yeah. It won't be the same. It won't be the same place. I don't think I'll be stood by Richmond Bridge again next week. But yeah, I'll be wherever you want me to be at whatever time you'd like me to be.
The injunction will probably kick in by next week, Jack, so you will have to move. On that note, folks, as I say, we've got a busy podcast. We've got Bex Williams coming up next. Then we've got the guys from the American Rally Association telling us all about that and the app that you can download and follow what's going on with David Higgins, Travis over there, and obviously many, many others. And also there's an R5 that's going to be appearing over in the American Rally Championship in a couple of events time as well. And then we finish off with another piece with the legendary Jerry Freeman, who's doing some stories of being sat with Carlos Sainz. I'll let you sit back and enjoy. I hope you're enjoying this. And again, spread the love, spread the word, love. You know where we all live now. And again, thanks for the download.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Obviously, Rye, Jack and myself have been talking nonsense for somewhere close on half an hour at the top of the programme, so we thought we'd bring some sense to the world of Absolute Rally. Do I sound serious when I say that? I did sound like a newsreader then, didn't I? But not for the first time, but certainly for the first time this year. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, Bex Williams.
Oh, thank you very much. The pressure's on now. Talking sense. I don't do a lot of that.
I know. No, but you do. You do. You, if, compared to me, Jack and Ryan, to be fair, you're like a voice of reason.
Yeah, but I do like the nonsensical rambles, you know, especially when you kind of go around and around a circle and no one's quite sure who's right at the end of it. It's always very entertaining. Although Jack always thinks he's right.
He does, but he bowls out big words every now and again.
That's just to intimidate you.
It is, it's massively to both Ryan and I. I can't remember what the one was last week, but he said one last week and I genuinely tuned out his point. From that point onwards, I was trying to figure out what that word was and I didn't hear the rest of his point. So he's got to be careful when he does that. So I know he listens to this bit. So Jack, there you go. Bit of a case in point for you there, young man.
I have to say a big thank you to Jack. I don't know if I've ever actually said thank you kind of, you know, verbally on air anywhere, but Jack was my little sidekick last year at the Circuit of Ireland when I was hosting the finish ramp. Turned up at the finish ramp and really nothing was kind of set up for the finish, and I had no idea of final classifications. We'd just been at the final stage filming some action and some end of stage interviews, and I had to then introduce all class winners. I didn't have a final finish list or who'd won all the classes, and Jack was stood by the side of me with the final running order and everything, and he was just feeding me names. I would turn to him and he'd say, "And this is so-and-so," and then I'd say on the mic, "Ah, this is so-and-so." So Jack was absolutely awesome doing that, I have to say. Well done, Jack. He is really, really good,
but we just don't like to admit it from time to time. To be fair, Ryan's quite good as well. In fact, I'm the weak link in all Ryan's got the knowledge. Ryan has got the encyclopedic knowledge of the size of a bolt on a World Rally car from mid-90s. Ryan, along with obviously his expertise of driving and everything else, Jack has also got this unique ability to retain information from before when he was born about rallying, and now obviously he writes about it. And I try and link it all together as best as I can with my ramblings. That's the best way to do it. If anyone reviewing our podcast, by the way, and if you do want to do us a 5-star one, that'd be lovely on iTunes. Not that I'm trying to preempt anything like that, but if you put that, I won't be offended. Basically, those two know what they're talking about, and they have some fantastic guests. Tony just rambles to link it all together. Pretty much what he's doing now. But listen, Bex, thanks for coming back on.
Welcome.
I've been dying to get you back on because we spoke to various people that have been around WRC this year, and we were all kind of mega excited. And I just wanted to kind of touch base with you. It's kind of, you've been around it for such a long time. Have we had any surprises so far? And I know we've had four winners, but you've been around these guys for years. Did you expect the season to be so vast and varied of what we've experienced so far?
Definitely not. I mean, let's be honest, like you said, we were all really excited. You know, the brand new regulations coming in, brand new cars, and it was sadly missing Volkswagen from the lineup, but we had all that excitement about where the Volkswagen drivers would end up, and Ogier to M Sport, how would that be? Yari Matti to Toyota. There were so many things that were thrown up in the air right at the end of the season, and we were all waiting to see how they would land and how the season would pan out. And yeah, I've done many seasons from, you know, I started WRC in 99. I did one event 99, one event 2000, 2001, then full time since 2002. So I've seen WRC with, you know, huge amount of manufacturers. I've seen WRC with just two manufacturers competing against each other. And I've seen it kind of rise and fall. And now it's really rising through the ranks again. And it's so exciting to have four different drivers, four different manufacturers on top of the podium. And you really cannot predict what is going to happen next. I mean, we head to Argentina next week. And, you know, I've just been listening back, just been making some little features for Argentina, listening back to Hayden Padden talking about his win and Chris talking about his and how special those final stages were. And I just don't know who's going to take the win next week. And I know for everyone who's trying to predict, you know, their top threes on their, you know, WRC predictors, it's so difficult. And that's so exciting. I'm delighted that 2017 has got off to this whirlwind start. Long may it continue, because WRC is right back up there now in terms of competition.
Do you think Volkswagen have inadvertently added to the season? I know it sounds odd, but we know how they dominated, obviously, in the previous generation car.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know, obviously, they were testing their 2017 car, you know, light years before everybody else. The fact that they've gone clearly has opened up the market. Or do you still feel we would have at least had another variant on the top step, or would Volkswagen have dominated?
I don't, it's a really difficult one to call. One thing is for absolute sure, that car would have been incredible. You know, the car that right now in my mind's eye is just in a wooden crate being shipped off like Raiders of the Lost Ark with the Ark at the end. It's just gone into one of those big warehouses, never to be seen again, maybe. I'm sure that car would have been incredible. You know, the thing about Volkswagen, yes, they had big budget, but they had incredible incredible people behind the scenes. You know, FX de Maison would have made an incredible car. There's no question about it. And I'm sure that, yeah, that maybe they would have been dominant again. But then Hyundai have come in and really upped their game with a brand new car. We saw Thierry Neuville in Monte Carlo and then in Sweden, very much comfortable in his lead, setting incredible times and then obviously making mistakes. It's really difficult to say. It's really difficult to say if they have inadvertently spiced things up. It's definitely a huge variety. It's better without them. It isn't, because we miss Volkswagen on lots of many different levels, competition levels, but also, you know, the social media level, the background that you got from them, the videos they produce, the fact that they made everyone feel part of the championship. You know, you were part of the Volkswagen team if you were following them with everything that they were putting out. And I miss that side of things as well as the competition side. But my goodness, it's exciting out there. It's interesting. And, you know, you've got to wonder if we will ever see that car in competition.
Well, I think it was, we'd heard things and I was, we've kind of, again, with our chats, we always go left field. It's never going to go the way we thought it would. But, you know, I'd heard some things very, very early on in the season that obviously Andreas had a program, with Skoda, but that was just awaiting, the fact he was going to get a privately run Polo, that obviously, that opportunity is now gone with homologations and things like that, and various other things have since happened, and that now hasn't happened, which is, I suppose, I wasn't going to come to it, but the situation with Andreas, somebody you know better than most, is still in a, you know, a WRC2 car. He's got some more outings with the Skoda and stuff like that. Where do you see Andreas going at this point? And it must be, you know, to remain motivated. You know, he won the final round of the 2016 World Rally Championship, the last generation of car, and, you know, to find himself with nothing within the blink of an eye.
Incredible, isn't it? You know, you watched him in Australia, and the confidence. It's, you know, he was in the lead. Nothing was phasing him. Took away the win, no problem at all. There he was, top of the table in Australia, and you thought, there's no question, this boy is going to get a drive next year. And I remember I think it was in Australia, a little hashtag that they'd written in dust or put on a bit of gaffer tape on the back of the car, which was hashtag hire me for this season. And no one did. No one did. Toyota went with Jari Matti Latvala. And I remember questioning it at the time because I saw the news come through and I'm like, what? You know, Jari Matti's season last year was not the strongest at all. And in comparison with Mikkelsen was the stronger driver. And I thought, this decision isn't, you know, great. But then I spoke to Jarmo Leitinen for one of our podcasts. I think it was just after Monte Carlo. And I said to him, because I've known Jarmo for many, many years and feel confident enough to say to him, What was the decision with Jari Matti? I questioned that at the time. You know, why not Mikkelsen? Who's stronger? And Jarmo said, Jari Matti, he said, for us, the appeal was, okay, he's a great driver. He said, but his base in terms of testing cars and his technical knowledge is by far the greatest of any other WRC driver. The feedback, he said, that he could give us to bring the car forward was the critical element in choosing Jari Matti.
That's phenomenal, because we always think of Chris. You know, I always go on about Chris, and obviously, you know, Chris Meek's background, and of course his dad and stuff like that, and Chris's experience of working at M Sport. So the number one kind of engineering background driver I always think of is Chris. I never really thought about it being Jari.
I guess it's because of Jari's longevity in the WRC, the fact that he has been in more cars than Chris. And I mean, Chris isn't available for starters, so they didn't have a choice of picking up Meek. But Jari's been around the block. He's been in many World Rally cars. And it was that technical knowledge which really pushed them in Jari Matti's direction. So, you know, you've got Mikkelsen then with absolutely nothing. Okay, he jumps in with Skoda and he's done very well for them in WRC2. But we all expected him to do well and to win events. If he didn't, it would be a big disappointment, let's be honest. But I know that he is talking to Hyundai. He's talking to Citroen. I think he's still talking with Toyota as well. But there's a new story which has just come out in the last 10 minutes with Autosport that he's going to test a Hyundai this week. So wow. I know he's been talking to all the teams. He certainly has not been sitting on his laurels. He's got a very good management team behind him, with Even Management, who look after Esa-Pekka Lappi as well, Pontus Tiedemann. They've got a rallycross driver in there, which I can't remember his name at this point. But, you know, they have been very much pushing, and they've been the driving force behind him to make sure that he's back in a World Rally car this year. And it looks like it could be one of those three, Toyota, Hyundai or Citroen. I did speak, it's funny, because I'd heard a little rumour, you know, you heard these little things, and I spoke to Michelle Landon in Mexico and said, you know, possibility of a fourth car this year? No, I don't think so. Are you sure, Michelle? Maybe. You're like, okay. So, yeah, when I get to Argentina next week, I think I'm going to be knocking on Michelle Landon's door again and saying, is there the possibility of a fourth car? I mean, is that what it's going to be? I don't know. But it's great that he is going to be jumping in and testing these cars, because Tony is a talent that we don't want to see disappear from the WRC. You know, he's another one who can be right up there fighting for the top flight. And we've got so many drivers doing that right now. Let's put another one in the mix and make it even more interesting.
Well, Latic, you know what? You've kind of gone exactly where I was going to go, because you spoke about the confidence he exuded on Rally Australia. And then Thierry Neuville, you mentioned as well. Of course, he did have a couple of issues, obviously, on Monte and on Sweden and stuff like that. We know that they're very, very good friends. But for me, if Thierry's got that air of confidence like what Andreas had on Australia almost, and I felt like this was the next generation coming through, and I just hope we're not going to be robbed of that. And from what you've just said to me, obviously that's not going to happen. Andreas, if he keeps on testing all these cars, and you know, I'm sure he'll be in something else before the end of the season testing as well, he is obviously making sure his stock stays as high as possible.
And that's the crucial thing. You know, we keep seeing, there's a lot of social media around Andreas. Every time he's tweeting or he's putting something on Facebook, it's always the hashtag, you know, the fight back to WRC. He's keeping himself match fit in terms of keeping himself physically fit. You see the training selfies that go up. I'm sure lots of people enjoy those.
Not me.
He's very aesthetically pleasing, but not my type. Let me just put that out there. He's constantly zoned in on getting back into WRC. He's doing every single recce for every event. So we'll see him in Argentina next week. And I'm sure he will be then inundated by questions from journalists, you know, with this news that we're hearing today that he could be testing a Hyundai this week. There'll be lots of questions floating around him. He's keeping himself very much in the mix, keeping his name out there. And that's really important. We saw him, he's doing a bit of media, wasn't he? He was with Red Bull TV, which has been a new thing this year and quite a successful thing, I think, as well. I don't know if you've caught any of the Red Bull TV program.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed Andreas's insight as well. I watched the very first one and it was different. It was good. It was light, but, you know, factual.
Yeah, and, you know, it's really great to see presenter-led programs back in the WRC. You know, I think Mike Chen as the lead presenter is just perfect choice. Mike is fantastically knowledgeable, but he's just a cheeky chappy, and he gets on with everyone. He's got a great rapport with the drivers, and you kind of bond with him on screen as well, which I think is really important. But yeah, seeing Andreas doing that, I mean, it's obviously not what he wanted to be doing. He wanted to be in a car in Sweden, but there he was doing Red Bull TV, and he's keeping himself in the mix. He's still sticking his hand up saying, guys, I'm here. I'm ready to jump into a car whenever you want me. I'm ready, and I can win rallies for you.
A driver that I think we all find fascinating is our 4-time world champion, of course, Sebastien Ogier. He's gone to a team that you know very, very well, and not a week goes by where we don't make reference. And one of our listeners actually made a game call, which is called Absolute Rally Bingo, because there's certain words that we use on quite a regular basis. X Works, Ryan's Subaru, that was one. Absolutely. I can't remember. I think one of the guys anyway, basically we repeat ourselves, and there's a game of bingo that you can play when you listen to our podcast is where I was going with this. But we always talk about M Sport. Yep. And we always talk about M Sport being a family team. And I always mention the 5 degrees of separation. If you know, if you're involved in rallying, you will know someone who works at M Sport. If you don't, you'll know somebody that does. That's the way M Sport is. Seb's gone from that beast that we were talking about, of Volkswagen, and he's gone very much into that family fold. And it's a team that you know very well. You know Malcolm very well. Have we seen anything different from Seb this year? Is the weight of that big manufacturer now gone from his shoulders? Are we seeing a different Seb that we feel this
year? I don't know if Volkswagen was ever a big weight on his shoulders. I think, you know, Seb, and he always has been this way since he came into the championship in junior days. He commands a certain amount of respect, not because he's arrogant or anything like that. You just, when you're talking to him, he's completely professional. He's the ultimate professional. And so is Julian as well. And it was a comment that was made, I can't remember by who, but when they first went to M Sport and they were having a look around, and Julian was being, you know, is asking all kinds of questions, especially with regard to the car and, you know, the spare wheel. And if I have to do this, I have to do that, you know, hugely professional. And I think the whole team then, you pick up when you bring two people in who are world champions, who are completely focused and driven. There's no messing around for them. They know exactly what they want to do and they know how to do it. They know how to win rallies. They know how to win championships. They know what it takes. It raises everyone's game. And I think that's certainly something that we're seeing. And what's exciting is to see the morale being raised. M Sport is such a hardworking team. And, you know, they haven't got the budgets of some of the other teams, but what they have got is the passion and the drive. And then to have a world champion brought in and to be able to work with him, to get him through rallies, but to also learn from them as well. You know, Seb is passing on a huge amount of knowledge to the team. And it's great to see that. Okay, they had a few tough times in Corsica. It wasn't just Seb, but, you know, the whole team with various things with a car. That's certainly going to be looked at between now and Argentina, I'm sure. There has been a little bit of difference. And it's one thing I noticed in Mexico is, I don't know, maybe a more relaxed Seb. I don't know, maybe he's chilled out a little bit. And not because the pressure's off. I don't think there was any pressure from Volkswagen as a manufacturer, because they were such a friendly team and such a relaxed team, in the sense that they were winning so much and they were dominating. They had that confidence that there wasn't pressure on their shoulders. He does seem slightly different, maybe a little bit more chilled out, but still incredibly driven. And yet he's under a bit of pressure now, because he's not winning everything, is he?
Well, that's kind of where I was about to go, because you can't, and I mean this with the greatest respect, you know, it's, you know, M Sports drivers from the last couple of years, I think it's fair to say, you can't imagine them possibly going and banging on Malcolm Wilson's door saying, I want this doing, I want that doing, I want that doing. Whereas I can imagine Sebastian Ogier flying in and saying, I'm got an appointment. I don't care. I haven't got an appointment. I'm going to see Malcolm. I want this doing. I want this doing on this car now before this test. I can well imagine, you know, I'm obviously saying that tongue in cheek, but I can well imagine Sebastian Ogier, you know, being at that point where he's saying, no, this car needs to be here for me before this test.
I am pretty sure that Malcolm will be the first one to say that Seb is keeping him on his toes. You know,
that was the short version of what I was trying to say, yeah.
I think, but there's going to be a certain amount of, okay, I don't think they've butted heads, or we certainly haven't seen that visually in the service park, but they will be wanting the best for each other. Malcolm has, you know, contributed a lot of budget to have Seb within the team. Seb is a world champion. He wants to continue to do that. They both have, you know, a big purpose here. Malcolm wants to get the championship win. He wants a manufacturer's win. Seb wants a driver's win. They are both going for the same goal, and they're going to be fighting as hard as they both can to achieve that. Yeah, you're right. You know, in the past few years, M Sport haven't had the budget to be able to go out and get drivers who can get them championship wins. Now they have a world champion as part of their team, and they know that they have to keep that going, that momentum going for Seb. But for themselves, there's a huge opportunity here, and they do not want to waste that. They are working their socks off to make sure that that is not lost, believe me.
I can well imagine. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about, I know you do all the end of day FIA interviews and things like that, and you've been privy to see all the boys that we all look up to in different teams, different manufacturers over the last four events at the end of every day. Now, how wide-eyed were they on the first couple of rallies having made that jump from last year's car to this year's car. Did you see any difference in them? Were their eyes, you know, a couple of millimetres higher than what they might have been from last year, or what? Or have we just got drivers now that are just kind of used to the speed and they just move on?
I think they're used to it now. They are. I mean, I'm sure we'll go to some events a little bit later on in the season. You know, more Sweden is obviously a high speed event due to it being snow and ice. But when we get to Poland and Finland, when I think maybe the eyes will be widened again and the smiles bigger, I think they've got used to the speed very, very quickly, because they were doing so much testing last year with the cars. So they could recognize the speed, the power behind the car. And then they were jumping back into the 2016 and thinking, hold on. This isn't quite what we're used to. So I think, they're more than used to it and really enjoying it. You know, it's been interesting to see, especially when we got to Sweden with the jumps, because we were all questioning how it would work with the jumps with all the aero on the car now, you know, the downforce keeping that car close to the ground. Were they going to be able to jump? And I think, you know, a lot of people saw over Collins Crest, some of them jumped well, some didn't. You know, we were kind of relying on the R5 cars really to show us the way jumping wise. It was interesting to see, you know, the reaction to all of that. But in terms of the power, they're absolutely loving it.
I was just about to say, one thing we did find out about very, very quickly, and it hasn't come about too much since then, was the issues that Mads had losing the rear spoiler, yes. And which is one thing that we speculated about and we talked about so much on our podcast towards the end of last year and even the beginning of this year, was what was going to happen when corners got knocked off cars. Now, ironically, it wasn't a corner in this instance, it was the rear spoiler. And if ever there was a version or a realization of just how uncontrollable these cars can be at speed without that rear spoiler, it was that.
And you're right, you know, we haven't really seen that since, and hopefully we won't, because undrivable is what Mad said, and you could certainly see that. Hopefully we're not going to have an instance where aero disappears and, you know, drivers just decide that they can't continue on because of the undrivability. Is that even a word? Probably not.
You can have it. Jack's not in this bit. He won't correct you. It's all right.
Claiming that word. We haven't seen that. But, you know, we go to Argentina, which is, especially on the final day when you have El Condor and you have the incredibly rough, rocky sections. Hopefully no one's going to be hitting any rocks and taking any bits of aero off.
Can I put you on the spot?
Oh, God, go on, what?
Argentina.
Yes.
Four different winners, four different manufacturers. Who's going to claim their first, second win as a manufacturer there? I'll go with manufacturer. I'll at least give you that out.
Do you know what? It is. It's a tough one. It is. It's a really tough one. This is really on the spot now, but I am going to go with, for their second win, Citroën and Meek.
Wow. There you go. I'm going to make a note of that.
Chris, I bad jinxed you. I'm really sorry. I'm touching wood and everything here, but...
I know we're in different time zones, but I will be tweeting you during the early hours of UK time, albeit your local time over there, about this. Just bear that in mind.
I'm behind you in time, so it'll be perfectly fine.
Oh, that's all right then. Well, listen, Bex, it's always a joy to have you on, and the door is always open. And as ever, we all enjoy your podcast. And I'm not just saying that, but you had Seb on last week, and I thought, we've got to get Bex. We've not had Bex on for a little while, and Seb's going to come on in a couple of weeks' time as well. And I think you're a bit like me. You've known Seb for a long time, and I was so, so pleased when that was announced. And nothing against John, and you did a great piece about John when you were talking about him as well, but you know, John was always going to step aside at some point, and I just couldn't think of a better man. And I guess we are a little bit biased because, you know, we're Brits and everything else, but Seb is the hardest working co-driver I think I've ever experienced, to be perfectly honest.
It's always great to chat to Seb Marshall, because he's got so many great stories, you know, and as we were talking about in that podcast, his career is a nice one to chat about. You know, he's done lots of different things, and he's seen the sport from different angles, being in the co-driver seat, but also running teams logistically. He's kind of seen it from both sides, and I like that side of things with him, and yeah, it's always great to chat to him. But John Kennard, I mean, I was emotional talking to John when we were in, where were we last? Corsica. We did a little feature interview with him, which actually has just gone up as a podcast today. And I was emotional talking to him about his retirement. I can't imagine what we're going to be like in Finland. You know, because John's career is absolutely huge when you look at it from a co-driving perspective, but also the teams that he has worked for, you know, behind the scenes, not in the co-driving seat. So actually for every rally right up until Finland, we're going to be doing little feature interviews with John on his career, because it's just too long to sit down with him at one point and go, right, let's talk about the whole thing, because we'd be there all day.
Well, we came up with it. We had Chris Birbeck on, who's a very good friend of Ryan's, and obviously he's got the rally school, and he was also ran the full junior program back in the day in the British Rally Championship, but he was a works driver in the Nova, and he had John sat alongside Chris Birbeck in his Vauxhall Nova. That's how far back it goes. You know, he was sitting with some bloke from North Yorkshire in a Vauxhall Nova. You know, that's, so when you start thinking about, you know, he lives in New Zealand, and, you know, this is long before the days of kind of internet and stuff like that. You just imagine how that would have been put together, you know, just a phone call, you know, that long distance delay and everything else, you know, no such thing as emails and things like that, but he has been around forever.
And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to hear his stories and his anecdotes. And we're hopefully going to get some questions from people, you know, who listen, but also questions from people around the service park on his career as well, so we can put to him. And yeah, people who've worked with him, and they know the inside track, the inside stories, those little kind of nuggets of gold that only people who know you really well, who have been there back in the day in the early 90s or the 80s or whenever, and know about this kind of stuff. So, you know, hopefully that's going to be great. But talking to Essa Pekka tomorrow, who's just been announced as third Toyota driver for Portugal. So that should be an interesting one. I'm really keen to see how he can do.
Yeah, well, we're, you know, again, we all speculate. I must admit, the first thing I did when I seen that was released, and that story, is that I wanted to double check that they were running a third car, and that wasn't demoting Hannan, who's just had such a terrible time. And, you know, we've spoke about it again. You're always one of those people we spoke about so many times, and, you know, such a dominant force back in the IRC days and the Super 2 cars and things like that. And, you know, took on all comers, took on Thierry Neuville and all these people, but just hasn't quite worked. It just hasn't quite clicked for them in a World Rally car,
both
at Hyundai and Toyota at the moment. You know, we're only four events in, of course. We've got to go down that route, but I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I just feel for him so much.
I do, because, you know, you see flashes of brilliance from Juho, and he can deliver quick stage times. And we certainly saw that in Corsica. We saw that in Monte Carlo on the first evening in Monte Carlo. He was the highest placed Toyota as we ended the Thursday night. I think he was in second or third position from memory. You know, we're seeing bits of brilliance from him. Mexico, we can completely rub out because he was extremely ill. How he made it through the rally, I don't know, but he had pneumonia and he rallied and he was throwing up at stage ends. He came back to the service park into the media zone, got out of the car, straight to the toilets to be sick. And you're like, how are you keeping it together? It is really hot in Mexico. It's hot inside the car. You know, it's a tough rally. And there you are, just focused and getting the car through. And he was never going to set fastest times. He was never going to be competitive feeling that way. So we can rub that one out. But we saw some brilliance coming through again in Corsica. I think it was Saturday morning. He was setting some really brilliant times. He was second, third quickest. And he said, right, if you can just keep that going, keep that consistency going through event, then brilliant. But then mistakes creep in and he hits little things, little bridges or little trees or whatever. And you're kind of like, oh, Juho. You feel for him because you know it's there. There's no question that it's there. But it doesn't just seem to consistently be there. Mistakes creep in. Maybe it's because of the pressure. I don't know.
You've took the words right out of my mouth, because, you know, the pressure that must be now building. You know, when you've got, you know, again, it's one of those things where we're all speculating everything else. But to know that there's somebody like Andreas, of course, who we spoke about before, who hasn't got a drive and is, you know, desperately trying to find a solution to get out this year, and you're making mistakes, I think any driver in any team must go, I have to watch myself here. And, you know, out of all the drivers at the moment, you would have to question, you know, probably Juho Hannanen. You know, everybody else seems to be doing, you know, a solid enough job, as it were. And it's only really Juho, as I say, you can wipe out the one, obviously, where he was ill and everything else. But other than that, I don't know who else you could put a question mark against, unfortunately.
I think the team will obviously, you know, let it go now and see how the rest of the events develop. They have a good relationship with Juho. He's done the majority of the testing and the development on that Toyota. So they, you know, the team have a great bond with him. And, you know, I'm sure, okay, there will be pressure on himself as a driver. Everyone wants to be competitive. Nobody wants to be making mistakes, and no one will be kicking himself harder than Juho Hänninen right now. I can guarantee you that. He's one of the nicest people in the service park. He really is. And he will be kicking himself with these mistakes that have crept in, because he knows that that pace can be there. And there's nothing more frustrating for a driver than not being able to consistently put it all together for an event and show that you can carry an event through with good pace. I've got my fingers crossed for Argentina for him.
Good stuff. Listen, Bex, we've took up more than enough of your time. You've got podcasts to do. You've got packing to do for Argentina. Ooh. And yeah, I'm massively envious. But listen, door is always open, Bex. We're going to come back soon.
Of course I am. You call me anytime.
All right. Happy days. Bex Williams, thank you so much for joining us Absolute Rally this week. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with something a little bit different.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangerondi Racecourse the 17th and 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangerondi Racecourse, 17th and 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And it's a little bit of an honour, a little bit of a privilege to have Chris Sear with us, who's the Vice President of the American Rally Association, which is the new championship that's been formed this year. He's a man who wears many hats. We've just been talking very briefly off air. He's also the manager of Team O'Neill, which is one of those big teams over in America that even we hear about over here in Europe. And he's also the man behind running the New England Forest Rally Forest events as well. So you're a busy man, Chris, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I have an obsession for business and rally, I think.
Well, it's a really good time to get you guys. We're just about to go into your second event of the season. Your opening event was a shared event with the Canadian Rally Championship. And how was that for you guys? Obviously, first event, but not quite on home soil. It must have felt a little bit weird.
Yeah, you know, there's a few reasons we wanted to do that, but, you know, transparently and honestly, you know, being a new series, being able to learn from the Canadians who have been putting on amazing events for decades, was a great opportunity for us to kind of get our training wheels on as a new sanctioning body, but also to do something different, you know, have a co-sanctioned event. And we wanted to kind of show the public we're different, and we wanted to do a lot to make North American rally, you know, better and try to have a cross-border competition. So we wanted to come out strong with a big statement and say, hey, we're different, and we definitely want to work with everyone in the world, but especially North America.
I just want to say, because the Canadian series is possibly had similar issues, is the wrong word, but you know, you've had a dominant force in Canadian rally, and you've had a dominant force in the American Rally Championship over the last few years, of course, being David Higgins. So I suppose a good way of trading these guys off, and to be fair to Antoine, when he came on the program, he was keen to point out obviously his car's not quite as well as well developed and things like that. But those guys were trading times, as was Travis, of course, who's come back very, very strong this year. Those guys were all trading times. It just adds to the excitement, doesn't it?
Totally. And it being a snow and ice event, that's a great equalizer. You know, it's not all about all the traction and power on a snow and ice event. So it kind of made it where we weren't too worried about, you know, they didn't have the same equipment. But yeah, it was a very fun time. And, you know, talking to the Subaru USA guys, you know, they were excited to do a different event, something they haven't done. So from what I understand, David had never actually competed at that event. So it was good for him to try something completely new.
Absolutely. Now, the championship came about. This is a new series. You say you've made reference to the fact that it's a new sanctioning body. Just tell our listeners a little bit. We've covered it once or twice, and we've had some guys on from your neck of the woods also explaining what had gone on as well. But I always feel like we need to kind of just very briefly recover our tracks a little bit, really, on how this came about.
Yeah, you know, it's just like most things, people are upset with the current administration and the way things are run. And so people wanted to do something different and have a change. And there was a big effort to try to fix what was already out there. But what at the end of the day, the problem was we were looking at was a for-profit operation versus a non-profit operation. So ARA decided, you know, the people who formed ARA decided, you know, it was one of the biggest problems with the current rally in the U.S. is the sanctioning bodies were for profit. So there was somebody at the top trying to benefit personally. And we thought that was kind of the systemic problems that we saw and the other issues that were in U.S. rallies. So that we kind of thought, you know, we had to start from scratch. So, forming it as a non-profit sanctioning body means no one owns it. It's owned by the members. So everyone who's a part of it helping grow this is owners in it, essentially. And all the money gets to be used for the benefit of our people, of our members. So the events benefit, the competitors benefit. There's not one person at the top benefiting. No one on the board or no one, you know, involved with this side of the rally is being compensated. So everyone's doing this as volunteers. And we've had over 50 people volunteer significant amount of time helping write rules or helping lay out this or that. So it's just been a really cool thing to see so many people get together and want to do the right thing for rally, especially here in the U.S.
You've talked about a leveler there as well, and you've just been talking about regulations. There has been some tweaks to the regulations, hasn't there, this year with regards to the number of tyres, etc., that the teams can use. Can you just explain to our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, one of the big concerns was the level of competition and being able to have a as close to even playing field. You know, honestly, David's such a good driver, and it would take a lot of people quite a bit of time of racing and rallying to get up to his level of rally. But we want to be able to at least have people have the same level of equipment on a reasonable budget. So, you know, the idea is the top level guys, you know, giving them a bit more restrictions. One, to make it so that people in the bottom of the field or at the middle of the field could have a chance. You know, if David has a bad run, gets a few flat tires, Travis, same situation, that they could actually get a chance to get on top of the podium now with a slower car or maybe even a faster car, but maybe just not as experienced of a driver. So it's a lot of trial and error. We spent a lot of time with people who are very qualified to get these rules set. But, you know, we'll see how it goes this first few events.
So it's exciting. So we're into your first. It's not your first event. Obviously, we've just been making reference to the fact to the opening round being in Canada. But this is the first one back at home. It's a proper gravel rally with those limited number of tyres and things. And I guess that's also going to be interesting to see tyre management and things like that on this opening round.
Yeah, that's, you know, we're excited to see how that goes. And obviously, we only have the few competitors at the top who are having to deal with that. But yeah, I mean, we've got an R5 coming over from Europe, new competitor looking to do the last five events. So he's not going to be restricted. He might be on the next event, depending on what his speed index comes in at after this event. But, you know, there's some big cars coming out to this first event here.
It's exciting. Can you tell us who's having an R5 car over there, or is that secret still?
Yeah, so Barry McKenna, if you look at the entry list there, Barry McKenna worked with the guys over in Europe and is bringing one over. So we're excited to see that.
Wow. Because I suppose this is the other thing now as well. You start looking, I suppose, behind David and Travis, you want to see people coming over and upsetting the odds. And obviously somebody coming over with an up-to-date kind of European-built R5 car, you would like to think is really, really going to open things up.
Yeah, you know, Barry's been doing some European rally, mostly tarmac. He did a whole season here in the U.S. With his two-wheel drive Escort. So, you know, that's something that he's got to get used to the car. So we'll see how it goes, though.
Cool. But listen, before we get on, there's a couple of things I wanted to just run past you. Some of the other runners and riders, I guess, and you know, we've been we're blessed over here. Obviously, it's rallying is perhaps a slightly higher profile than what you guys have over there, but it's definitely growing. I think possibly off the back of Rallycross and things like that, and obviously what Subaru have brought to what's going on. Of course, what Ford have also done with you guys and the Team O'Neill side of things as well. Are the young drivers starting to come through now? Are we starting to see people perhaps, you know, that may move on and maybe try and compete in other parts of the world?
Yeah, that's a great, you know, obviously that's kind of part of the goal of this new sanctioning body is to address that. I don't think we've really seen it yet, since that's one of the big things we want to see, but, you know, it's one of those, it needs some development, and with Rallycross, it helps people understand us. You know, we get a lot of young kids here at Team O'Neill, especially calling, asking about what does it take to get in. So that's promising. But now, you know, with ARA in this next year, we want to be able to have, you know, championship development type of championships, and, you know, maybe something similar to what the junior championships are over in Europe, to be able to get young drivers in and hopefully developed so that eventually maybe the U.S. could get back on the world stage.
I was just about to say, because obviously you guys have worked closely. I know you've got a good relationship with the likes of M Sport and people like that, obviously through Ford Performance and things. Do you think there could be some scope maybe for, you know, a one-make championship? Maybe that could be a way to go. I noticed that Dave Wellingford over there has got the R2T, for instance, and obviously that is the bit of R2 kit to have in Europe.
Yeah, I think there is something there, totally. And, you know, I can't say too much, but we've started on it, I guess. I can say that much.
Good stuff. Well, listen, we'd like to talk to you about Oregon Trail. It's an event, it's not a new event, of course. It's an event that's been around quite some time. And it's one of those ones that obviously, aside from David, who's dominated, we haven't had, I suppose, a new winner of this one for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, Oregon's such a historic event, and it's been running for a long time. So the event, we're confident, is going to be a smooth running event. But yeah, now with everything's kind of different on the administration side of things, and seeing how, you know, it's going to be a lot of the same roads, a few new roads, and being able to see what people can come out and do with the new restrictions.
Listen, we're excited. We're really pleased you got Travis back, and we're really pleased. Obviously, there's rumours or certainly confirmed stories now with regards to R5's arriving, possibly a junior championship. I won't push you on that. Don't worry, I won't push you too much on that one.
I'll call you as soon as I can tell you more.
Good man. I appreciate that. But no, things are looking healthy, and I think that's great for rallying. And as I say, you know, we've had one export from you guys over the last few years. We've had Alex Karani, of course, who's a co-driver. He's come over and he's done quite a bit over here. He sat with a few friends of mine as well. A very, very good, competent co-driver. And again, I suppose that's the other side of the things that you're trying to develop over there. I know Craig Drew's been running workshops as well, hasn't he, for co-drivers as well.
Yeah, totally. Anything we can do to get young people up, and co-driving is a great way to do it if you not have the budget sometimes. If you can become a good co-driver and don't have, you know, endless pockets, you might be able to get in some really nice rides eventually. So, you know, that's something that's a very smart way to do it. We definitely are excited for that. Something else I would like to throw out real quick is ARA just announced our new rally app as well. So anyone in the world that wants to watch, we have Easy Track we've partnered with for the whole season. So you can watch live tracking and unofficial times on our app. So ARA Rally in both the iPhone Apple Store and the Google Play Store. So definitely watch this weekend and kind of check that out.
I've already got it. I've already downloaded it, and there's videos there. Obviously, there's the live feed, there's photographs and things like that. It's a really, really good app. Very, very easy to work. Not too complicated at all. If I can work it, then anybody can work it. But yeah, check it out on where you get your apps, whether it's on Apple or whether it's on other brands that are available, of course. But yeah, good on you guys for a little bit of forward thinking. Was that something that obviously, you know, we've got WRC that's got a tap over here and other championships have tried it. But is this something, again, with you guys taking control of things and taking control, I suppose, of almost like having your own TV station, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, talking with our partners, Toyota and Subaru, you know, being able to control the media, and, you know, our media policies are wide open now, so we can have media come and shoot and even sell their own content. You know, the other sanctioning bodies have been more restrictive on that. So we're trying to be completely different on the way we allow media and attention, and we want to be able to get people to watch rally. And so, you know, obviously, future stage, you know, we want to put live tracking videos and other things inside the app, and that's probably a year away, honestly. But, you know, it's something that as we get, you know, money and we have members, the members keep joining, we get that $25 ARA membership fee, that money we go right back out and we can do cool stuff like this app. So it came about pretty quick. It was something that we had a really good opportunity to do this app, so we just pulled the trigger, no question. And that's the type of stuff ARA wants to keep doing. So we appreciate all the support that we've been getting through the public. And, you know, we just, any money we get, we're putting right back out so people can hopefully enjoy more rally.
Good man. Chris Sear, the man of many hats, we really do appreciate your time this week. We're going to be keeping an eye on the results, and we'll do a little bit of a results roundup as well next week from Oregon Trail. But we really do appreciate your time. Thanks, Chris, for coming on today.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks, folks. Listen, folks, before we go, we're going to go to one last section, the second part of what we did with Jerry Freeman last week. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed the first part of it. There's some giggles in there, wasn't there? But we're going to cross over to the final section now with myself and Jerry Freeman.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
One thing I seem to remember from, we mentioned about Carlos there, was that he was possibly, I think it was Malcolm Wilson, if I'm misquoting, then please, people put me straight, but that Carlos was possibly the hardest working driver that he'd ever worked with regards to, now that might be changing now, he's got someone like Sebastian Ogier there, but certainly his eye for detail and the repetition and testing and stuff like that. Is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The first test of the year, always, which was, you know, going to Monte Carlo, or actually it could have been just a general car test for the start of the year, was well known as the test from hell. Because Carlos would get in at first light and not get out till it had gone dark. Well, Carlos was seriously hardworking. Seriously, seriously hardworking. And wouldn't stop till he got it sorted out.
Was there a polar opposite to that? And I don't mean from the lack of professionalism. What I'm talking about is, was there a driver at that period who would pretty much just get in the car and drive it as it was and make it work?
Ewa Kankkunen.
Yeah?
Yeah, Ewa Kankkunen, no question. First time I tested with him in Greece, not the first time, but we tested in Greece. He drove the car up and down. He said, yeah, that's great, let's go playing golf. No, you have got to do a bit more yet. But, a lot of the Scandinavians were like that. Marku was another, Marku was just, you know, when they sit in a car, some of those older generations, Scandinavians especially, they were just like, they were part of the car. You know, you could almost indiscernible from, you know, a driver and a car. They just sit there and they knew what it was happening. They just knew, like Colin. Colin was like that. Colin could just sit there and could just feel it and just knew, you know, was just part of it. But Marco was just, you know, half driver, half comedian. Marco was just amazing. Funny bloke. Funny, funny guy.
What period would that have been that you sat with him then? I was just thinking about what he would have been running.
Most of the testing I did with Marco was when he came to Toyota.
Okay.
Third car, GT4. First test I ever did with Marco. So you can imagine, this is the great Marco Allen. And I've never sat with him before. And I'm a bit starstruck. I mean, there's no question, a bit starstruck. And we're testing in Greece. And I sit in this car, Marco gets in. And I said, you know, we'll tyre test later and stuff, just go and get used to the road. Yeah, okay. So we set off in this car, and a four-wheel drive Toyota suddenly became a rear-wheel drive Fiat. And we got back, after a couple of laps, and I couldn't stop smiling. I thought, this is just fantastic. So I said, I will take it seriously now, Marcus. So we put some tyres on, went off up the road and came back. And as you do, the first thing you do, he said, so what did you think about that? And Marcus says, and this is absolutely quotable, Marcus says, my Pirelli tyres are fantastic. Okay, that's good. Write that down. Yeah, here we go. They'll all like that. My Toyota is incredible. Well, okay, fair enough. But, driver, more incredible. Notepad went straight out the window. I thought, what am I dealing with here? But great fella. I mean, the stories of Marco were just, you know, they are part of rallying lore. And I would suspect most of them are true.
Yeah.
You know, he used to make me laugh. He used to make me laugh a lot. Great bloke. No, but in that period, there were a lot. Good drivers, some a bit serious, some a bit, you know, but...
Who do you think kind of...
No, you're going to ask me who's the best now, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm going to go slightly left field here. Who do you think didn't quite fulfil the promise that we thought they were going to?
People I sat with, or just in general?
No, people you sat with during that period where you thought, wow, this guy is... And it just didn't quite happen for various reasons.
I mean, honestly,
yeah.
Mark Lovell.
Yeah.
Mark Lovell was... On tarmac, one of, if not the best tarmac driver. He was a brilliant driver on tarmac. Never actually quite took the next step, you know, didn't take it to World Championship. Which did surprise me, because Mark was fantastic. Really fantastic on tarmac.
He was very... We were talking about this towards the end of last year on the podcast when we were talking about the Manx, when we were going over to the Manx, and of course there was that famous part where he was... dominating the Manx, and he was told to slow down, and he decided to do a donut in front of the TV camera.
Yeah.
Which...
Well, I mean, that actually kind of talks about the potential, doesn't it? Because Mark had to do it in front of people on the Manx, and Colin did it in Catalonia.
Yeah.
That was the step that he never actually made, you know, which was a pity, really, because Mark was... terrifically good, really, really good.
Do you think we're going back and forth a little bit here? But I know, obviously, like, so your kid, and obviously what we've just been talking about there. Did it help having someone like RED so close to home? Did you guys do much with RED? Because I have a fear that we're losing some of these kind of way we used to have these satellite teams, the way when we had Boreham and stuff
that. It was a difference.
A lot of people seem to have, I don't know, do you know, it's one of those things where I don't know whether everybody who tells me they worked at RED or did something for RED actually did, or whether it's just folklore, because I'm sure the place would have been a hell of a lot bigger if everybody who told me went to RED.
Some of these satellite teams were terrific, you know. Gordon Spooners, Mike Littles.
Yeah.
I mean, Dick Cormack, he came from Mike Littles, he was one of the best car, but when Dick Cormack finished a car, it was absolutely stunning. Stunning. Yeah. The satellite teams, they employed a lot of people. I mean, you shouldn't be underestimated, you know, in those days. We started this by telling you about, you know, 400 tyres per day. It was... entire madness, the amount of money they used to get thrown at it. So they needed big teams. So there were a lot of people who actually did work for a lot of these satellite teams. And it was only when it when we got to sort of smaller works teams that a lot of these people disappeared into the ether. Mm. But it's sad, but it's common sense, really, isn't it? Because we ended up, it was just too expensive.
Yeah.
It was just too expensive. But yeah, I mean... I'm not sure that the relationship between all of these smaller teams to the main factory was always that smooth. But and so, therefore, it was, you know, quite difficult at times. But, yeah, I think in answer to your question, yeah, we miss some of these satellite teams because, you know, three heads are better than one, aren't they?
And it's actually a proven ground, isn't it? You know, yeah, a lot of guys exactly. Went through the proven ground.
Exactly.
Now, in fairness, and this is unrelated, although I suppose the Ford connection is there, M Sport is now kind of seen as the family team. You know, I've joked about this so many times, and Martin Holmes, who was on the programme the other week, he and I spoke about this with regards to, if you don't know somebody at M Sport and you're involved in rallying, it's a miracle. It's like 5 degrees of separation. Everybody kind of knows somebody at M Sport because the way they've gone through it. And it appears to have that family feel to it. I wonder whether you know, obviously Malcolm went through, you know, the Malcolm Wilson Motorsport and then went off to Boreham, whether something, because you work with him at Boreham, you sat with him when he was doing that stuff.
Yeah, well, I think that it's... it is probably the... I'm trying to think of other ones now. I don't think there's another one that's quite like M Sport.
Yeah.
But, you know, family team, yes. Very professional. I mean, you'll need to look at it, you know. Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Pro Drive. You know, I don't know whether anybody will be particularly amused that I said that, but, you know, it, really good professional teams, you know, with an eye for... building customer cars, keeping customers happy. I mean, you only need to look at the results now, don't
you?
Know what I mean?
You mentioned ProDrive there. It's quite an interesting one because, of course, that period we've just been talking about with the likes of Mark coming through and, you know, doing British Championship, of course, in the Ford Sierra and things like that. That's when ProDrive were just starting to come through. They were running customer cars, 6R4s and the M3 BMWs and stuff like that. And then... the Subaru thing happened, and it's like that was, you know, as we know, rallying today, even though Subaru are now, I suppose, not at the highest level anymore, but it did kind of change the face of rallying as we knew it.
Yeah, I think it did. I think that it shows that from a relatively small manufacturer, which they were, what can be achieved if, you know, you believe in your product and you put it in the hands of good people. You know, I'm absolutely certain that that's what's going to happen with the Toyota and Tommy. Look at the Ford and Malcolm. Going back to what we said before about smaller teams. Well, obviously we do miss them because you can see that some of the smaller teams actually end up being the really big teams, don't they?
Mm.
You know, but ProDrive. You have to remember the only dealings I had with ProDrive when I was Pirelli UK. Was with the BMWs racing. When I came back to ProDrive, it was when Subaru changed to Pirelli from Michelin.
Right.
We had, you know, quite a bit of involvement in the British Championship with Colin and with the LNX car with Richard.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, when they got the new cars, the Impreza. Really took off. But Malcolm, what you were saying before about Malcolm, Malcolm's involvement at first with the Ford connection, when I sat with him and when I dealt with him, was when we were developing the Cosworth Sapphire, you know, and we were trying to build a four-wheel drive car, which eventually became the Cosworth Escort. But, yeah, that all started with... Stig doing quite a lot of the work, and then, you know, Malcolm did quite a lot of development, and Franco Cunico did quite a lot of the development work. Yeah, it was a great era. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Were you essentially the Ford sack of spuds then for all these drivers when they were testing it? Or
with the development of that car?
Because this is during your tenure working for Ford as opposed to doing anything for Pirelli, wasn't it?
No, this was working for Pirelli.
Pirelli.
Yeah, because what we tried to... I mean, it was a very, very good project because they tried to develop the car along with the tyre at the same time so that when it actually came to compete, they wanted it, you know, to virtually win out the box, which is in Monte Carlo with Delacour was pretty much what it nearly did. You know, so...
Did you ever sit with Delacour?
Yeah.
Was he as mad as what people think he is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, just checking.
As a hatter. Yeah, but they were, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, all of these people, you've got to have a certain amount of screws loose, haven't you? You know. But, you know, to sit in a car next to some of these was a pure joy, and some of it was just an absolute fear. Some of them were wild. Wild.
Wild where it felt out of control, or wild of just a level of speed?
Both. You know, you can see there are people that, you know, you would think on World Championships that it was really, really quick until they crashed.
Yeah.
You know, and that never seems to have changed. Yeah.
This is Absolute Rally.
Folks, thank you for the download. We will be back same time, same place next week. Absolute_Rally on Twitter, absoluterally.co.uk, of course, and patreon.com/AbsoluteRally if you feel you can get involved.